Rules Committee this 21st day of June. If those people are here to testify on Senate Bill 171, we will not be hearing it today. Apologize for you waiting. If you were here for that purpose, it was posted too late to get it taken off the agenda, so it will not be heard. Craig Miller, you can go put me on another list now.
Which bill is that?
Colleagues, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1052. Cletus, if you want to read the summary.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 1052A authorizes the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, DPSST, to appoint and commission human special agents. Defines human special agents as a person employed by a human investigation agency and granted peace officer authority to enforce state law relating to animal welfare. Provides that humane special agents must satisfy minimum standards of physical, emotional, intellectual, and moral fitness established by the DPSST for law enforcement officers. Clarifies that humane special agents do not possess training identical to that of certified police officers. Holds humane investigation agencies employing humane special agent civility liable for any abuse of the humane special agent's authority. Directs humane investigation agency to pay DPSST for cost of training humane special agents. Requires that monies received for the training of humane special agents to be deposited into the police standards training account.
Thank you, Cletus, for that rousing rendition of a bill summary. The chairman has to go testify in the other Senate Rules Committee, so I shall be back. But if you want to come on forward and get started, Representative Dalton will preside.
We'll invite the Humane Society forward to introduce this measure to us. I'm having trouble reading the name, so I'll let you guys decide. Agent Tyler, is that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good afternoon, welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Dalto and members of the committee. My name is Sharon Harmon, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Humane Society. A little point of clarification, we are a nonprofit animal welfare organization in the state of Oregon. We've been in operation since 1868, and we are not affiliated with any other reported national, local, regional, or whatever animal protection agency. We're all separate entities. Since the time of inception, our humane investigators have been providing services to the state of Oregon to investigate and assist in the prosecution of animal welfare crimes. Under the current law, which is an old statute, the governor has the power to deputize or commission humane agents to represent the state as peace officers. This statute provides very little direction in the nature of training, very little clarification in terms of liability and responsibility. It's wide open. My commission has no restrictions and no requirements to it. If I was you, that would be of great concern to me. At the request of the governor's office, we have worked for the past 18 months to create a bill that takes that old turn-of-the-century statute and brings it up to modern terms. It does not create any more powers of authority than we have now. It doesn't require the state to pay the Oregon Humane Society any money. It does require additional training, such as the police academy, of which for our last three officers, we're the only agency to pay for that training at our own expense. This is really a housekeeping bill to amend the statutes for which previous officers have been appointed. We have been commissioned as peace officers with the limited authority to enforce animal welfare laws. And this bill does nothing more than continue that statute that has existed for many years. Our officers, since I've been there since 1990, have been appointed under the old statute, which is much broader than this one. This is a limitation on the old statute. It allows the Department of Public Safety and Standards to establish minimum standards of physical, emotional, intellectual, and moral fitness for humane and for any agency that is able to willing to bear the cost of responsibility of creating a humane enforcement department. And this does not impact the budget of any state, county, city agency, and the full cost of any performance, salary, training is borne by the individual agency. What I do want to clarify, because you would look at this as a legislative body and say, well, geez, we're empowering a private, not-for-profit agency as peace officers. Well, we've been that way for several decades. Two, what this does is require enhanced training and responsibility for it. But it also limits this authority to any agency that has had a humane investigation agency or a humane enforcement division for at least 5 years. The only agency in the state that meets that requirement is the Oregon Humane Society. And while I am uncomfortable limiting the number of agencies that can provide animal protection services, I do feel these restrictions are necessary. We have the experience, we have the training, we have the long history of being responsible in our jobs. I will never never surmise to say that there is enough people on the ground to meet the need. However, we are asking to be allowed to continue to meet the needs of the state as statewide agents. We don't have jurisdictional issues. If there's a case in Harney County and the person moves to Baker County, the investigation doesn't start all over. It continues with the same folks involved. As has been our practice, we play well with others. We work with animal control agencies, sheriff's departments, livestock investigators, the state veterinarian, local police authorities to either help them successfully investigate a case and document evidence or to take over the case when no one else will. In any case, we work with local authorities to make sure we're all connected, we're all on the same page. There are restrictions to our authority as defined in the statute. Page 2 of my testimony refers to to statute 167.335, and these are the exemptions from the animal protection statutes. Pretty much any good animal husbandry is exempt from animal welfare statutes. We do not know what good animal husbandry is, but whatever is in practice is pretty much deemed to be that. That leaves out practices that farm animals are used for or subjected to, research animals. We'd love to know what good animal husbandry practices are. We'd love to define that at some future date. But for right now, it's a pretty, pretty broad exemption. Commercially grown poultry, animals involved in rodeos, lawful fishing and hunting trapping activities, wildlife management, all of these are exempt from the current animal welfare statutes. Senate Bill 1052 would not extend our authority to do this. We are still limited by the laws, and we have no intention of taking over these responsibilities. We've proven our intent for the last several decades. You know us. We've worked for the state of Oregon. We're a conservative to moderate animal protection organization. We're not radical. We've been working in the legislature since the start of the legislature to enact animal protection laws, and we appreciate the opportunity today to bring this bill to your attention. Thank you.
You forgot the most important point, which is I've seen this kind of work on Animal Planet, so it must be good.
We would all love to be on Animal Planet. We were on Oprah. Does that count? But not Animal Planet.
Agent Tyler, did you have something to add?
Sure. I'd like to give a little of my background. I started working Special Agent Carrie Tyler. I'm employed in the Law Enforcement Division of Oregon Humane Society as a humane investigator. Previous to coming to Oregon Humane Society in July of last year, I was working as an animal control officer in Lincoln County for about 11 years. I got my governor's commission in September of last year and have been working in the field for Oregon Humane Society ever since. We receive literally thousands of complaints, requests for service a year, and our main thrust is educating the public. That's the main thing we do out there, is educating the public on how to better care for their companion animals. We use resources, ours, other agencies, refer to other agencies that can do it better if we can't handle it. And as a last resort, we will resort to prosecution, and we hope that we can get animals removed from abusive, neglectful situations, successfully prosecute those cases, and get sanctions on the people that do that, including counseling if they need it, not owning any animals for a certain period of time. excuse me. We work, or I have worked with various agencies throughout the state. Just since I started in September, I've worked cases with Clackamas County, Yamhill County, Multnomah County. I work with and would call on police agencies if I needed their law enforcement techniques that I don't have. Any agency across the state of Oregon that wants to call on us and call on our services, I will go work with them. If I get a case called into me that's from another agency, I check with them, see what's happening, see what, where they're at, and if they want my help. Have quite a bit of training over the last 11 years, including animal fighting, zoonosis, rabies training, animal handling, extensive animal handling, assessment of neglected and abused animals. I've had physical skills, communication skills. Recently, I completed the 10-week course at the Department of Public Safety and Standards and Training in Monmouth, the police, Basic Police Academy. And I've gained a lot of skills there, although I also took a lot of training that doesn't really apply to my job. I will never pull over a drunk driver, that, those kind of things.
Some of us appreciate that. you got to laugh. Go ahead.
Yes. But one of the things I might add, Chairman Kitts and members of the committee, is that while we've attended the police academy, we have not, nor are we interested in carrying firearms. That is not something that we feel is necessary. If we feel we are in a situation that where officers could be put into danger, we work very closely with armed local law enforcement communities, and we never serve a search warrant by ourselves, even though we're authorized to do so. We know better than to put our lives at risk.
I've got a question. Are there any provisions in the bill that from your, I'm not seeing any, but from your interpretation of the bill, are there any provisions that would prevent a special agent from interfering with like a commercial livestock, you know, operation or an animal research facility? I've got, you know, OGI, for example, in my district. I mean, is it the intent of the bill to allow these type of investigations?
Chairman Kitts, members of the committee, the second page of my testimony has got existing statute 167.335. Our humane laws already exempt research laboratories, rodeos, good animal husbandry, commercially grown poultry, fishing, hunting, and trapping, as well as wildlife managers, lawful scientific or agricultural research, or pest control. That exemption from the statutes already exists in the revised statute. So to have it in this bill be redundant to what is already true for every other animal welfare officer in the state.
Okay. Representative Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If this is going on now, and it's operation now, why do you need this bill?
Representative Greenleg, members of the committee, at the request of the governor's office, they were increasingly concerned with the issue of liability and training. I mean, Governor Kulongoski's signature is on our commission card, and there are no restrictions. This year, we work with the governor's office to create a contract, per se, that established what the training criteria were. But this is an improvement over the existing statute because the governor's office is quite concerned that there are inadequate protections for the state and inadequate requirements of humane officers. We doubt that our commissions all expire September 2005.
May I follow, Mr. Chair?
Please.
But it's up to the governor to decide who he appoints as commissions. And what would stop the governor from simply saying, in order for me to appoint X, anybody, here's the standards that they need to meet?
Representative Greenlee, members of the committee, I would ask you to ask the governor's office for their reasons.
I'll be happy to. Could we ask the governor's office to join us on this and see?
They're signed up.
I think they signed up to testify, so if they want to...
Here we go. Campbell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Craig Campbell. I'm the governor's senior policy advisor. And we did, in fact, ask for this legislation to be drafted because currently the governor does appoint these individuals, but we have no apparatus to supervise them to make sure that the training is in place, nor does the current statute require any such training. So we also are concerned about the liability that comes about from that sort of responsibility without any sort of statute. Short provisions to put on guidelines, if that helps.
And if I
follow up.
So under this bill, and I read it once, it will assure you that these things have happened. Will you have the apparatus to assure that what's required in terms of training the bill actually will have happened?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, what it does require is it requires that whereas now we don't have any training requirements, nor are there any requirements for the standards for the police, for the humane agents, those would be statutorily put in place. And that increases our comfort tremendously, also because we are not the ones doing the appointing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome, Representative.
Thank you.
As a follow-up, if I might, you spoke of the exemptions. And Representative Holvey's going to break out in a cold sweat when I bring up these two words again. It says, however, the legal standard that applies is gross negligence. It seems to me, you know, that if we empower a citizen police, peace officer to act as a special agent, it could be up to these citizens to determine, you know, what is gross negligence. And we dealt with this on another bill and went round and round for weeks and weeks and weeks on end dealing with the real estate agents of defining the term gross negligence as related to their industry. So these words give me great pause. So is it up to the citizens to determine gross negligence? Is there a standard set by which gross negligence is defined?
Representative Kitts, members of the committee, actually, it's not up to regular citizens. It's not up to law enforcement to determine what gross negligence is. It's up to the district attorney. All cases have the gatekeeper there is the district attorney, whether they want to prosecute. When we have looked at this, and as we have...
But somebody has to bring it to the district attorney
right.
to prosecute. So is it arbitrarily decided amongst those humane agents out there? Well, I think that's gross negligence. I'm bringing it before the DA.
Any citizen can bring that case to the district attorney. Sorry, Representative Kitts, members of the committee. Any citizen can. We have no greater or no less powers to do that. There's a pretty clear exemption for the livestock industry. Good animal husbandry is an undefined statute, but if it has been done, it will be done. In other references in the statute, things such as castration without anesthesia, dehorning are all specifically exempted as a good animal husbandry statute, but are a good animal husbandry practice, but are not limited to that. They have pretty broad freedom to declare something a good animal husbandry practice. We are very much occupied with dogs and cats and companion animals and parrots and goldfish and the Rottweiler next door. However, the statute is pretty clear that protects the livestock industry.
I would also say to the committee, if you've not been down to Portland to see the facility that is run, they do an amazing job down there. I've had the opportunity to take a tour myself. Very clean, very well run, very professional. So I commend you on that.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other folks? Any questions? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, maybe I direct this to the governor's staff. I'm curious, do we have any other private nonprofits that enforce our law, state laws?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, the only other individuals that we appoint are the rail police, those who do railroad work. And I can't tell you what their responsibilities are and who oversees them. But they're the only other example where the governor's office historically has used the provisions of statute that allow this sort of appointment to go forward. And it's the humane agents and the rail police are the two.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up.
Thank you. And I'm curious because I also know that we have county enforcement of animal rights laws or animal laws as animal welfare laws, too. And I think those are county employees that enforce those laws. And I'm wondering what the communication or what the relationship, I guess, with your private nonprofit organization with the state is with the counties in enforcing these laws around the state.
Thank you. Representative Holley, members of the committee, I believe we have a great working relationship. There will never be enough people in the state to look after every animal cruelty complaint. The day there is, I can move on to something else, retire, go fly fishing, whatever. There is not ever going to be enough people on the ground. But I do feel like our relationship is very collaborative. With Multnomah County, it goes far beyond investigations. We take in animals from animal control and animal humane agencies from around the state. Over 31 agencies transferred animals to us for sheltering and placement. That's 2,000 dogs that we helped out around the state. In particular, Multnomah County Animal Services, we accept stray dogs for them. We transfer to them. They transfer animals back. When it comes to cruelty cases in North Portland, we talk. We find out what they're doing. They find out what we're doing. Sometimes things happen fast, and you'd like everybody to be on the same page, but much like the sheriff and your local police officer, sometimes things fall through the cracks. But I would say largely our relationship is excellent with any animal control agency in the state. We don't mean to take over their responsibilities. We simply supply additional resources at no cost to the state. Last year that was $200,000 worth of funds a private agency put into that program.
A follow-up, one more?
Yes.
Thank you. So I'm just trying to, if you can describe to me then in a particular county, when you're evidently called in on a case, for example, who's enforcing the law? Is it the county agents, county police, the county agency, or is your agency enforcing the law? I mean, who's writing the ticket? Who's, you know, or filing charges with the district attorney's office? It seems to me that's kind of the county's area, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's a state court that these charges go to, or is it all county court?
Well, these are state laws that we are enforcing. They're not county ordinances, so it'll become before a state court. They're statutes, not ordinances. County agencies have their limits established by ordinances. Some counties have established animal control agencies that mirror the state statutes. Most have created their own. The only statutes that we enforce, the only rules or laws, are those, the Oregon Revised Statutes. We don't have authority to enforce ordinances. When it comes to who writes a ticket, that depends on who wants to. And if a local agency is asking for help, we are there to support them because, by God, there's enough cases to keep our attention. About 1,000 a year with 3 officers. No one gets ahead of it. It's ahead of the game. If no one wants to take it on, we're there. Our job, we really, really much prefer, is to educate local law enforcement to give them the tools to do the best job possible. But these are tricky cases. Animals as evidence, it's a nightmare. You take in 500 dogs and the case has got to go through the courts for 2 years. Preserving evidence while treating the animals humanely is an enormous challenge. And we all share it. The case in Malheur County involving 534 dogs was very much a collaborative effort by several agencies. We all took a piece of the responsibility. We accepted 100 of those dogs. But it was Malheur County Sheriff, I think, that filed the charges.
Thank you.
Representative Farr.
Thank you. I just have a question regarding the types of cases that you'd be called to investigate. Could you just give me an idea of, like, what would a typical complaint be that you would go to investigate?
I think the bulk of the cases that we look into are simple neglect, dog tied in the backyard, not getting enough food, water, shelter. They're the bulk of them. Then they move on up to abusive situations, broken legs, no veterinary care. Could be recently there was a pretty high-profile one in Yamhill County, which included cats, dogs, guinea pigs, goats, cows, and that's extreme, where there may be animals killed too. So it goes all across the board. But the main thing is companion animals, including exotics.
So when you're called to investigate, what is the best case scenario for you? I mean, what do you hope to accomplish?
Best case scenario is we go and talk to the animal owner, educate them, and they're receptive, and they say, well, we didn't know this. We can do this. We can make a change here. And they make some positive changes. We check back with them as much as necessary, and they're educated, and they go on and take care of their animals.
So follow up. So I guess this is a trend. So if that's the best case scenario and the animal owner wants to comply, what if it's an issue of income? What if, I mean, the pet clearly needs to see a veterinarian or whatever, but their income level doesn't allow them to afford to do that.
Right.
So then are there any steps that you can take to aid them with that?
That's always a tough one. We have lots of resources, other agencies we can refer them to. Oregon Humane Society itself has programs to help low income. And we see what they need. We see if this company, these people can help them, and try to refer them out and work with them. And unfortunately, I have the tough job of telling people it doesn't say in the neglect law that if you don't have enough money to feed your dog, you're exempt. So, sort of see what we can work with on that. Maybe they just need temporary help, and they can get back on their feet and keep their pets.
On the whole neglect issue, would you guys be open to an amendment that it was okay for snakes?
Representative Kitts, could you elaborate on that?
To neglect them.
To neglect them?
Yeah, let them die. Get rid of them. Totally.
Your sense of humor is quite entertaining, but I assume that's what this is.
It was a joke.
Thank you.
Wouldn't break my heart, but it was a joke. I'll have nightmares thinking about it now. Actually, no further questions, unless Representative March has one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Campbell, I see that the category under which we're the special officers are appointed is sort of appears to be going after areas where there is not sufficient law enforcement for some reason or another, and I think it was contemplated maybe in historical days of where maybe one jurisdiction refused to enforce certain laws. And you inherited, of course, this condition, and it sounds like you're trying to clean up the law to match the cases. Is that the
Mr. Chair, Representative March, that's correct. The origins of the statute are probably the posse power that was originally given to the governor to assemble a group of people to carry on law enforcement responsibilities to go after ne'er-do-wells, which is a word I don't often use, and so I thank you for the opportunity to use it here today. In this case, I think this particular tradition began as a result of the inability of local government, who was already strapped to deal with existing law enforcement requirements, to also carry on the responsibilities associated with enforcing animal abuse laws. And so that's probably why these agents were created from the governor's office and have continued to now to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, and before any of your eyes, I will let you go.
Thank you.
Talking about ne'er-do-wells, you're not talking about anybody in the room, are you?
Absolutely.
That rogue in the back.
Why? Snakes are horrible.
I'm going to substitute ne'er-do-well for a bird snake.
Oh. Katie? Brian? Y'all want to come forward? You get it? Oh, Barry, also. I'm sorry. Three, you're fine.
Good afternoon, Chair Kitts, members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fass with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. We are here today in opposition of Senate Bill 1052. Currently, local law enforcement has the authority to enforce the laws relating to animal welfare in statute, and we feel it would be better served if we focus more on how we can improve that system and give them the added tools they need to enforce the statutes relating to animal welfare. Our concern is that there are organizations whose sole purpose is to restrict commercial agriculture and animal research facilities, and we see no provisions in the bill that prevent a nonprofit to claim to be involved in animal care from opening an animal welfare investigation department, maintaining it for 5 years, and then obtaining a peace officer authority. There are no provisions in the bill to currently prevent a humane special agent from interfering with commercial livestock and animal research facilities. You've heard reference that there are exemptions in the animal welfare statutes. However, those exemptions get thrown out the window if there appears to be gross negligence. And from our opinion, that's a very arbitrary term that has a different interpretation per person, and that would be in the hands of the peace officer or citizen patrol. Also, subsection 2 of the bill allows the humane special agent to act as a peace officer even in circumstances when they have failed to complete the required training in the time period allowed. It allows them to get a time extension to serve as the citizen agent without the needed training. We've heard from the previous testimony that the concern is with dogs and cats, and our opinion is then why doesn't the bill limit itself to domestic animals and patrolling their welfare issues? And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I also have my Barry Bashu, the president of Farm Bureau.
We're going to let the testimony and then we'll take questions.
Thank you, Chair Kitts, members of the committee. Appreciate the opportunity. For the record, my name is Barry Bashu, president of the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I can only echo Katie's concerns and those of our organization. It appears that the governors in the past have had this opportunity and this availability. Just because these special agents have been in force for several years does not necessarily account or equate good public policy. I think it's poor public policy to allow the governor or the legislature to appoint citizen police officers. Regardless of the amount of training that they have, they are accountable to effectively no one. It appears there is an unprecedented relationship between the Humane Society and the state through this governor and past governors to appoint what in effect is a private police force. I believe that this bill ought to be opposed. The Oregon Farm Bureau believes it ought to be opposed. If the governor is unhappy with the standards that are currently being set, he obviously has the opportunity, as I believe Representative Greenlick pointed to earlier, to set a higher standard for his appointment. So we rise in strong opposition to this bill.
Barry, thank you for being here today. Appreciate it. Brian?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Beringer, and I'm with OHSU. We would like to voice some conditional support for 1052A. I think we have some similar issues as the Farm Bureau and others. We would support the bill provided the powers conferred by this legislation are limited to unbiased agencies and cannot be misused by organizations with anti-research agendas. According to the language in the current version, this legislation pertains to a humane investigation agency, which is defined as a private nonprofit animal care agency that has maintained an animal welfare investigation department for at least 5 years and has had officers commissioned as special agents under ORS 131805. I think this is the key provision that our folks have kind of focused on. And if the intent of the legislation is to benefit agencies with agents currently commissioned under ORS 131805 at the time of bill passage, then we'd be happy to support the bill. However, this is a little confusing, and if the language defining humane investigation agency is not so limited, so that the commissioning process, like the Farm Bureau pointed out, is timeless and may occur following the passage of the bill, then OHSU would like to see this clarified. OHSU is concerned with the potential misuse of this law because we are now among a growing fraternity of research institutions in the country that have become the victims of unfair investigations launched by animal rights organizations opposed to the use of animals in research. Just an example, in 1999, the Animal Rights Organization in Defense of Animals announced that it had completed an investigation of OHSU's Primate Center and then made numerous false claims about animal abuse. A subsequent two-month federal investigation cleared OHSU, yet the university's reputation was irreparably damaged, and today animal activist groups regularly spread these false allegations, and these same false allegations have been used to fuel ongoing harassment of OHSU scientists, employees, and their families at their homes. Again, as strong advocates for the ethical treatment of animals, OHSU would like to support 1052A, provided it does not create a vehicle for animal rights organizations harassing OHSU or other legitimate research organizations in their conduct of important research. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Brian, thank you for your testimony, and I also have been to your facility and think that you guys run a good show out there as well. So, Representative Dalto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a number of questions.
Take them one at a time, if you please.
Yes, I will. Thank you very much. First, I guess I'll take the last part first. Mr. Beringer, are you equating the Oregon Humane Society with these animal rights organizations that you're describing that bring you concern for bringing these potentially frivolous investigations forward? Is that what you're doing in your testimony?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, absolutely not. In fact, that's why we're offering qualified support for this. We don't have a current problem with the Humane Society and their current officers, but what we are fearful of is making sure that this is tight enough that it doesn't let anybody else through the gate.
Mr. Chair,
follow up.
Because I noticed I noticed something in your presentation sort of indicates to me your feelings about some of these groups that are bringing these investigations forward. But I just want to make clear that you are not relating that to the Oregon Humane Society. I didn't think you were.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, absolutely not. And that's why we are offering qualified support.
Mr. Chair, some separate questions, please.
Follow up.
So my question now is for Katie Fast, who evidently doesn't watch Animal Planet and the shows on there. Did you know, Ms. Fast, that right now there are police officers on the road in various places in the state that haven't been to the police academy?
Representative Kitts, Representative Dalto. No, I don't deal in law enforcement.
Right. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Because, yeah, you know, sometimes there aren't slots available at the police academy. So agencies, smaller agencies in particular in small cities, will put citizens into uniforms and put them on the roads even before they've gone to the police academy. So evidently you didn't know that. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So then I'm struck by this point about wanting to give police officers additional resources to do these animal investigations. Is it your sense that they are actually doing them now?
Chair Kitts, Representative Dalto, I think it varies by county at the time. That is the primary agency that handles it, and it's in counties where the resources aren't available, where the Humane Society or others step in. And to address the issue with our concerns with subsection 2 of the bill, when we're allowing citizen law enforcement that is not overseen by a governing agency of police or county law enforcement, I think there's a different level of standard there when they are regulated by a nonprofit, not a government entity.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
I figured you might say that. Go ahead.
So was that a yes or a no on my question of whether cops are going out and investigating animal abuse?
Yes, there are animal control officers that are out investigating abuse.
Mr. Chair, do we know how many animal control officers the Humane Society has?
Three.
So, humane officers. So I just as a comment, Mr. Chair, I'm done with my questions. I don't know how many, you know, animal control officers the Humane Society plans to ultimately have should this bill become law, but I hardly imagine that three animal control officers who are primarily engaged in trying to protect dogs and cats from horrible, horrible situations in urban areas are going to be traveling the 10th largest state in the country, traveling around looking to harass livestock owners, animal husbandry folks, showing at an OHSU's door, knocking on OHSU's door to figure out what they're doing with their animals to do research. I mean, I think that some people need to pick their fights, and I'm just amazed at this testimony. So you have my comments.
I do. And I would also just state for the record, I don't know that it's the concern is that you're going to have necessarily the humane agents that you're speaking of out there on a tear. I think the concern lies is that in broadening the ability to bring in more people that other extremist groups may infiltrate those organizations under the guise of and have the ability that is being facilitated here, because as I read it, there is nothing to necessarily prohibit these actions. So,
Mr. Chair, let's get the opponents on the record saying that. Let's say they are concerned with animal rights activists infiltrating the Humane Society, which
Mr. Boehringer did state that his concern was to tighten up the parameters by acceptance so that these folks did not infiltrate these groups and begin a litany of harassment that they've been subject to in the past.
Actually, and to be clear, Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, it's not necessarily infiltration of the Humane Society that we're worried about. We're just want to make sure that the statute is tight enough that other groups out there don't set themselves up to qualify like the Humane Society. So
correct.
It's not even really infiltration that we're worried
it's
about.
It's a nonprofit.
But this bill only addresses the Humane Society, does it not?
Mm-hmm. It's nonprofit.
Mr. Chair, yeah, that's the question that we want clarified.
Okay.
Are these folks paid? Can you all?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So if we're expanding the ability to employ these folks, where does that money end up coming from? Is it fundraised? Is it state allocated? I don't know.
So,
fundraised. Okay. Thank you, guys.
Derek, I have a quick question.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask you a question similar to the one that I asked the humane officers. I understand your concern. What evidence do you have to substantiate the concern that there would be unfair allegations made against livestock owners?
Chair Kitts, Representative Farr, our concern comes with the definition of the organization, the Humane Agency, and that it is broad enough to allow in organizations who have agendas and individuals that have agendas. And I think those agendas are well known in the organization's mission statements and so forth.
Can I follow up?
Yes.
Could you just give me an example of what kind of investigation could be started that has you concerned for a livestock owner?
Chair Kitts, Representative Farr, I think there are concerns with for livestock industry, brandings, castrations. We've heard that mentioned in previous testimony. We've dealt with bills in the past that deal with farm practices that might be considered almost veterinarian with suturing injuries. Those are the concerns that we have.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, realizing the committee goes until 3, it's not the intention of the chair to make the committee last that long. I am going to be putting together a work group on this issue. I don't think we're going to have any result today, as I know there are some amendments being drafted. So what I would like to do is assign a work group, and if the proponents and opponents can get together this week, that would be great, and try to have something hammered out. I don't think your differences are all that broad. If in fact you can't come to an agreement, then if you could tell me that as well. We're going to be having another committee meeting
on Friday at 1 o'clock. I'm more than happy to reschedule this bill if the sides can come together, and if they can't, then express that to me as well. So with that, I know Mary is signed up to testify. Mary, do you still want to testify, or can you do it on Friday?
I can do it quickly today.
I would love that, as you could tell.
I was just chatting with the governor's staff to see if there's some way to fix this thing to solve people's problems. For the record, Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, and we love the Humane Society. Everybody does. Here's the problem. The problem is not the Humane Society, and let me be very clear about that. The problem is organizations who could, with a concerted effort, though I don't know that they have the ability to do it, could mirror the Humane Society with a different agenda. And so, having said that, you know, we believe, organizationally, we believe that the woman who testified on behalf of the Humane Society, Sharon. We think she's absolutely right. There's never enough people to enforce these laws. There's never enough people to handle animals that are abused. And what we want to do is we would like to do a couple of things. And I will tell you, Mr. Chair, that the bill has changed significantly from when it was in the Senate originally and what's before you now. And so what we would like to suggest is just that there be some kind of an authority sort of overseeing the operation. And currently, animal control officers in Oregon derive their authority through the Sheriff's Department. And they operate under the authority of the Sheriff's Department, and they derive their peace officer status under the authority of the sheriff. And they have very limited peace officer status authority. It is limited to only enforcement of animal cruelty, neglect, abuse, and control laws. We think that there's a way to do that so that the Humane Society is not damaged. Nobody wants to damage the three officers that they have or to eliminate them, but rather to clarify and tighten up the authority and who's ultimately responsible for their behavior and actions in the community. That's all we want to do.
Would you like to be part of that work group?
I would love to be a part of that work group. And with that, Mr. Chair, if we can do some tightening up on the language, we're all in favor of the bill. We just want to tighten up the language, delineate people's authority, and make sure that there's a chain of command that everybody can agree to.
Great.
Okay.
Perfect. Appreciate your testimony. Guys, with that, we're going to close the public hearing. And I understand the proponents of the bill wanted an opportunity to clarify some things. I declined that opportunity in the name of time. I wanted to state that for the record. But Friday, you'll have an opportunity to come back and hopefully not need to clarify anything because you've had agreement on everything. So close the public hearing on 1052. Open a work session on House Bill 3238. Cletus?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3238 permits standing committees of legislative assembly to review temporary, pending, and final agency rules. Permits legislative assembly to adopt concurrent resolution to approving rule or rejecting or amending rule. Makes pending rules effective at conclusion of session of legislative assembly during which rule is submitted for review. Prevents agency intended actions from remaining in effect beyond date of legislative assembly. Amends or rejects rule. Requires agency to implement legislative intent as expressed in concurrent resolution. Makes all administrative rules expire every 2 years unless extended by statute. This bill has been amended, and the amendments represent a merger of concepts from HB 2003, HB 2188, and HB 3238. HB 2188 represents the recommendations of a 10-member year-long work group established by bill in the 2003 session of the legislature. The amendments raise the bar for requested committee review of an administrative rule. It broadens the review of proposed rules to proposed and existing rules. The bill preserves the requirements of legislative council committee and committees of original jurisdiction received notice of proposed rulemaking.
And a lot of other things. Thank you, Cletus.
And then you get the dash 13s, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
13s or 14? 13, sir. That's what's been considered to be brought into the bill. 14 is not longer active.
My understanding is there was, if memory serves correctly, there were some concerns raised on a definition by Representative Greenlich. My understanding is, if I understand correctly, that Representative Greenlich, you wanted to state for the record a definition?
Mr. Chair, I do thank you. It turns out that the courts tend to use a particular dictionary. That's the Webster's Third International Dictionary. And I did want to put absurd in, and it does make sense when you hear it as this definition. It turns out absurd is not defined anywhere in statute. But putting on the record a very obvious thing, which is marked by an obvious lack of reason, common sense, proportion, or accord with accepted ideas as the definition. And an example that was given where I think a local ordinance that required irrigation in vegetation around commercial areas, and there was one place that put in a drought resistant display that didn't need watering, and the notion is forcing them to put irrigation in for a display that didn't need irrigation was an example of absurd or ridiculous. And I think this definition does cover it. It makes me feel comfortable to put it into the record since it's not defined anywhere in statute.
Thank you, Representative Greenlich, and thank you to Representative Thatcher for working with Representative Greenlich and coming to that compromise of what was needed to garner the support. Thank you to everybody that, especially Representative Thatcher, Pat, for their hard work and all those other vested interests that came together on this bill. So with that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Thatcher.
I'd like to move the Dash 13 amendments to House Bill 3238.
Representative Thatcher moves the Dash 13 amendments into House Bill 3238. Is there any objection? Seeing none. Done.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 3238 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thatcher would like to move House Bill 3238 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Excused.
Aye.
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 Chair votes aye. House Bill 3238 will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Thatcher, would you like to carry that bill?
Absolutely.
Great. Committee, we're going to just stand at ease for 1 second. If you want to leave, feel free. I'm just going to get Representative Dalto so if you wish to vote on that.